The Cambridge Marketing Podcast with Kiran Kapoor. Brought to you by Cambridge Marketing College. See their range of courses and apprenticeships at marketingcollege.com.
Hello and welcome. Today we're going to be looking at the future of work. And my guest is Natasha Wilson, founder and director of Cambridge Insights, who's also a development consultant and a marketer. Natasha, welcome. Shall we start immediately with the pandemic, which obviously had this massive impact on workplaces? Can you sort of put that in a frame of reference for us?
Yes, absolutely, Kiran. I think we're all a little bit confused. I mean, for many of us, the pandemic has restricted the places where we could work. So we were sent back home, a little bit like naughty children, and say, well, to be safe, for everybody to be safe, you know, we had directives from governments that, you know, we could not be amongst others to not, you know, in order to reduce the risk of infection. And that has been impacting most of us for quite a few years now. And I don't know if you've seen, I mean, even working, you know, in your organization, Kiran, there's a trend to want to go back in the office at least for some part of the time. So we're moving towards a hybrid world. And I was listening to a podcast recently about Google and how they're trying to change that also worldwide, but in the US. And this is a push to try to encourage, you know, most people to go back to work 2 to 3 days a week to increase, you know, potential collaboration and brainstorming and working with other team members, meeting clients and partners. So there's this kind of like push for us to still socialize and meet up. But at the same time, we're not out of the pandemic. So it's complicated. I don't know if you've been in those meetings where sometimes some people are, you know, in person in the office, others are remote. And you have to try to make sense of it, both in terms of how we work together, but also individually about our own well-being. So I think we're in a bit of a confusing transition.
I think it's a very interesting time, and you do get people, particularly senior, comfortable people with large houses and gardens, where they're saying, well, I get so much more done at home. Yes. And I think, in fact, that's quite dangerous because you become very task driven and you lose the collaboration and the interaction.
Yes, absolutely. And also, not everybody has that flexibility. You know, I work with many people who are based in labs or, you know, places mm-hmm. where they have to be frontliners, you know, in health sector, where so it creates also some tensions. I think we've been pushing the agenda around equality, diversity and inclusion. But actually, maybe we are less inclusive because some people enjoy working from home. They may not have caring responsibilities either, or they may have people to help. Others have to juggle a lot of things when they're working remotely. I think there's a sense as well of always wanting to do more to be seen that you are being efficient. So the idea of a normal work day or the number of hours you would have done in the office is different now. And people feel sometimes burn out because they're working too hard. So there's this element as well around developing our own resilience and our agility. And I don't think it's inherent to being, you know, human. I think we have to learn how to do that. We've all adapted, otherwise we wouldn't be around. But I think the scale of it and the requirements that are, you know, kind of thrown upon us to always be agile, to be flexible, to kind of be different people at different time, regardless of where you work, is quite confusing. So it's probably down to organizations to make sure there's the right training in place, the right systems in place, the right structure, and I think the right culture as well, which we can explore a little bit further.
It's very interesting thinking as a team leader myself is trying to be fair to different people with different responsibilities and different requirements, because you have to have fairness. It was one of the things that used to come up a lot when people talked about being flexible for people with children. And yes. I absolutely support that. But you also have to support those that have chosen or do not have children who equally turn around and say, well, why can't I have holidays at particular times of year? Because you're always being flexible to those with children. But actually, there are things I want to do. So there is there's always this balance of fairness, which I think is sometimes overlooked in a drive to try and be as flexible as possible.
Absolutely. And there's been a switch, hasn't it, from companies. I remember Some of my colleagues, you know, wanted to work from home and have a laptop, company laptop, for years. And HR used to say, no, you can't do that. You have to be, you know, in the office. We need to see people working in the office, and this idea of presenteeism. And then you're right, this element about fairness, about, you know, managing people's needs and expectations. And so the big question, Kieran, I think, is like, you know, is it supposed to be about the number of hours we do and where we do those hours, or is it about how effective we are? And I think that's a better conversation. So maybe this opportunity to think about how do we create a world of work that allows us to be more impactful and more productive sounds more interesting to me than thinking about number of hours and where you work. What do you think?
It's very interesting. And yes, I'm completely with you. One doesn't want to go down presenteeism. The trouble is, to some extent, corralling people in one place between certain hours of the day, say 9 to 5, means that the collaboration can happen. Whereas you can't always say to people, right, I want you in the office between, I don't know, 11 and 3 on every third Thursday, and we will collaborate. I don't think it works like that. But you tell me, you're the collaboration expert.
It's really interesting. I think I would say there is a pre-pandemic and post-pandemic, or pre-lockdown and post-lockdown. I think, you know, the way we structured our organizations and the physical evidence of organizations, big investment in large buildings, you know, many of the, if you think about technology companies, pharmaceutical companies, or, you know, around Cambridge and much wider around the world, have invested in creating spaces, workspaces that are supposed to help us to collaborate. So, you know, we all think about the Google Slides, you know, the fantastic canteens, or you know, the kind of like, you know, gyms and training places and all the other things that have been developed to create almost like an ecosystem to encourage, as you say, a feeling maybe of collaboration and community. So there's been a lot of investment and research in that. But in a way, the pandemic has thrown all that in the air. So maybe there are other ways to encourage that collaboration. And you're right, the face-to-face, you know, opportunity to collaborate, to connect, and not having just a slot every 3 weeks to say you're going to be creative and collaborate with each other, is probably not the right solution. But there's probably something in the middle, and something we're co-creating in a way. You know, how do we make it work and reinvent the maybe the organizations of the future? I mean, it sounds exciting, don't you think?
So you talked about culture, which is obviously a very key issue. So how do organisations develop a culture that in this new world?
So there is a big push for purpose-led leadership and visions, clear visions, shared vision. And so the vision could be very much about as well, how do we work together? How do we make sure we share information with each other at the right time, with the right people, and work towards shared goals? And I think that's easier to say it than actually to do it. But it's like having a very clear understanding of how you fit in the organization and how your work contributes to the wider goals of the organization. And I think that's what it is. It's rather than thinking about collaboration as a kind of like a forced, you know, method to get things done, it's having a much clearer understanding of why you are doing what you're doing. Now, we know that with some of the early research that the younger generations, Generation Z, and to an extent the previous generation, are very interested in purpose. And they are more likely to be loyal to an employer and to perform well if they understand the clear purpose of the organization and they share the values. So actually, when we recruit new people, maybe we need to also make sure that collaboration is one of the values as well that we are, you know, maybe embedding in organizations. And what does it mean? I did a workshop a few months ago about this, and it was about collaboration within a research and innovation environment. And we kind of unpicked a little bit that maybe sometimes people believe that collaboration is around communication. And that's a big part of it. You know, how do you communicate with each other? But it's also much more than that. It's also about cooperation. And it's also about, you know, again, this shared, you know, wider purpose and goal that you have together. So you see that internally working with, you know, smaller teams, but also think about partnerships and collaboration, strategic alliances, you know, at larger scale. That also has to be very clear from the start. You know, why are we working together? What is it that we are going to gain from working together? So it's the culture is quite complex, but I would always go back to this shared values, very strong purpose, and having the right structure, you know, that helps and enables people to work well together.
Okay, so there's two things I wanted to pick up there. We'll come back to structure. The first one was you use the word collaboration and then you use the word cooperation. What's the difference?
I think cooperation could be, for instance, you know, Kieran, you would say to me, I'm working on this project, you've got a little bit of information, or you, you know, have worked in that area, could you feed into this project? So I'm cooperating with you, I'm giving some information. But maybe at that stage, I, apart from this altruism and wanting to kind of help, this is not necessarily a shared goal of mine. I think collaboration would be something much deeper, where we both have, you know, some common goals on a joint project, for instance. So you go the kind of extra mile. So you could cooperate with your team workers and wider stakeholders, but not necessarily go to the nth level and collaborate. I think in a way, collaboration is really, you know, also having other people's back in a way, if you think about it. I'm not always a great fan of illustrating examples using, you know, other sectors such as the army, but I've learned to recognize the powerful structures and training that is provided. And the ultimate goal is that collaboration is actually, I will do everything I can and beyond what my role says, you know, to support that project, to support that mission and purpose. So I'm not sure if I'm explaining it well, but it really requires, I suppose, an increased amount of what people might refer to as loyalty or dedication or commitment. Maybe that resonates better in our world of business and beyond. What do you think, Kieran?
For some strange reason, I've got an image of children playing when they cooperate by swapping toys, but they collaborate when they're actually building a game together.
Yes.
But I think it's I think that's what you're saying. There's the shared vision, or there's the sort of sitting alongside but happily sort of swapping Lego bricks or whatever. I've no idea why that came into my head, but it seemed to fit.
But I like it. I like it. It's almost like building something together is a really good analogy. Yeah, I really like it. And where no one is thinking, oh, this is my bit. This is my bit of information. This is my toy. You know, it's very much about shared. Yes, and an element. Yeah, absolutely. I like it. I'll steal it.
Feel free. So let's come back to structure. And one of the things I'm very interested in is the structure of an organisation, which you said was very important. And then I want to explore how technology can help us with that. So why does the structure matter so much?
I think it matters because it's really requiring this time we're faced with right now, you know, the pandemic and a lot of other pressures that are thrown upon us, you know, in view of sort of the macro, you know, elements that are at play. I think it's requiring us for us to be very agile. So, you know, agile and flexible, I talked about it earlier on, is to adapt, which means that we have to go a bit beyond some of the previous structures and roles, you know, like job descriptions that maybe were set in the past, because this were done at a time where you had, you know, more stability. Of course, it depends on the industry. There's some industry that much further fast moving than others, but overall there was more stability in markets, and now we're seeing very different landscapes. So the structure has to really adapt, you know, to have a very hierarchical structure for certain organizations may still work, but when you look at startups and new organizations, you tend to have more matrix organizations. So you would have the opportunity to work maybe in a team with a direct, you know, line manager, but you also might work on other projects with another team leader across another part of the organization. So which means that we are shared, there's a shared leadership, and there's also shared efforts and shared inputs in terms of collaboration. So this is the kind of structures that we need to think about, and whether, again, this idea that leadership is the one person who has the job title that says leader on it, or who has the status, maybe, again, it's a little bit obsolete. And there might be moments, especially when you're acquiring to have access to very specialist skills, where, you know, you have to let people to step in and take that leadership role, maybe for part of the project or for a particular challenge that you're trying to solve. So there's, you know, question mark around structure and leadership that needs to be adapted to the 21st century and where we are at the moment. And this is important, and many organizations have to find the solution themselves. I don't think there's one solution fits all, but there are some experiments that are being done, you know, in startups, in other types of organizations, to see how people can work more effectively together. And the structure has huge impact. And you mentioned technology, which I'm sure all of us have increased our skills tremendously on the use of technology. And I think, again, that's a sphere that is going to improve and increase. So we have amazing tools such as Zoom and Teams, the tools we're using now to connect and be able to share, you know, this podcast with our audiences, and doing that remotely, not having to be in one place at the same time, is also incredible. So we have to be grateful for this. But I don't know what your experience is. I mean, I've worked as well with organizations where we have project management tools such as Asana, or you've got Microsoft Project, which is a kind of like Jaguar version of Microsoft of project planning. You also have other platforms such as Slack or Trello to share information and communicate with teams. We have so many tools. And I think when I talk to many of my colleagues, the challenge can be training and engagement level. So people are excited at first, and then they kind of like go back to what they used to do before. How easy is it to use? Where the data is stored, because there are a lot of privacy options that one need to be really careful about, but also integration and compatibility across different systems and platforms. So I think that technology can be an asset if it's done well and used properly, but also if people are trained, you know, and know how to use it properly. But it doesn't necessarily, it's not enough. You know, going back to these values, shared values, and that kind of like purpose, the technology is there to support us to work together effectively. It's not a replacement tool, in my opinion. And I wonder what is your experience, you know, running a team, and again having had that issue with people not being you know, in the office because of the pandemic. What are the implications on how we work together with technology? I mean, It's a personal story, isn't it?
Yes, and I agree with you about no one size fits all. I also think you have to be very honest with your organisation and your team that we're all struggling and groping towards a solution. And you try things and they don't work, and then you try something else and it works a bit better, and then and it is iterative. But unfortunately, that's at a time when a lot of people are craving just some stability. So when we talk about going back to life as it was, what I think most of us mean is don't chuck away all the wonderful things that we've all learned. I mean, it's great. I can podcast. I can have people on the podcast who are based anywhere in the world now. It's fantastic. But what I think people are looking for is to say, right, this is what's going to happen now. So for the rest of the year, you can guarantee that all these things are going to happen and be in place the way we used to think. And I don't think any company can offer that.
Yes, it's true. It's like sometimes the tools are there to mimic what we're trying to do with you know, in a kind of natural setting where we were, you know, in meetings together. On the other hand, I've had many feedback that people have felt that some of the meetings are more constructive using technology rather than having meetings that were, you know, 3 hour long in a boardroom where things were not really happening. So it's really also, I think, a good time for organizations to think about what is the purpose of meetings and what are the purpose of the different tools that we have to help us, you know, share information, make sure that everybody's heard. It goes back to this ability for us to have, you know, inclusion. All the voices can be heard. One of the advantages of technology, I think, has been that maybe people who were slightly more introvert could use chat, you know, online to provide some feedback, or you may have anonymous, you know, feedback tool. I'm looking at one particularly that is really interesting on how to run successful meeting and use anonymized, you know, feedback. And, you know, the percentage of engagement increases. So maybe that's also a really fantastic way to think, how do we use technology to increase that, you know, ability to gain valuable feedback from people who have more intelligence and information that we think they have, and we can't always get it at the right time, and to help us solve problems, you know, run projects more swiftly, you know, get products, you know, out more quickly or more efficiently. So this is kind of a crucial time, isn't it? It's like exciting, I think, really exciting. And what I've always found, Kieran, I don't know if it's your experience, is that we don't always stop to evaluate what works or what doesn't work. We just keep going. So we feel like we are always chasing our tail. And maybe, again, it's a fantastic opportunity with technology to think, if we invest in this, let's see how it's working and how we evaluate its success. And that, in turn, can help us to see how we work together and what else needs to be happening. So I see it more as an evolving, an evolving project in a way of how do we develop this structure, which tools do we use to embed collaboration in our organization, and with that element of inclusion, I think that is really critical, isn't it? So every voice is heard, and the nice thing is, it would be fantastic is you know, everybody's heard, but at the right time, not behind, not when the project is finished or when the product is launched.
And on that lovely call to action to consider evaluating the way that organisations should be going and using the tools and technologies to enable us to do that. Natasha Wilson, thank you very much for your time and for your insight into the changes on world of work and collaboration that the pandemic has given us.
Thank you so much, Kieran. Take good care.
The Cambridge Marketing Podcast from Cambridge Marketing College, training marketing and PR professionals across the globe.